Tri bhratri suhrit putra hataste vigatang vayam atma chacharya grasta parageham upasase. The brother, well-wishers, and sons are all dead and passed away. You yourself have expended the major portion of your life. Your body is now overtaken by invalidity, and you are living in the home of another. Purport. The king is reminded of his precarious condition, influenced by cruel time and by his past experience. He should have been more intelligent to see what was going to happen to his own life. His father, Vichitravirya, died long ago when he and his younger brothers were all little children, and it was due to the care and kindness of Bhishma Dev that they were properly brought up. Then again, his brother Pandu died also. Then in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, his 100 sons and his grandsons all died, along with all other well-wishers like Bhishma Dev, Drona Acharya, Karna, and many other kings and friends. So he had lost all men and money, and now he was living at the mercy of his nephew, whom he had put into troubles of various types. And despite all these reverses, he thought that he would prolong his life more and more. Vidura wanted to point out to Dhritarashtra that everyone has to protect himself by his action and the grace of the Lord. One has to execute his duty faithfully, depending for the result on the supreme authority. No friend, no children, no father, no brother, no state, and no one else can protect a person who is not protected by the supreme Lord. One should therefore seek the protection of the Supreme Lord, for the human form of life is meant for seeking that protection. He was warned of his precarious conditions more and more by the following words. By the influence of time, one who is honored becomes dishonored, one who is dishonored becomes honored, one who is rich becomes poor, one who is poor becomes rich, one who is famous becomes... Well, there's two opposites of famous. One is infamous, another is insignificant, obscure, and vice versa. It's said to be the influence of time. Time is the medium within this material world by which everything changes. The living being is eternal by nature, and accepting a material body tends to think of whatever situation he's in as eternal. But by the influence of time, that situation has to be changed. So time is the... It says by the influence of time, time is the medium in which the conditioned souls live out their fantasy of Ishvaraham Aham Bhogi Siddhoham Balavan Sukhi. That I am the controller, I am the enjoyer, I am perfect, powerful, and happy. Time is the medium, and fame, infamy, obscurity, high position, low position, material happiness, material distress, all these various conditions are achieved within time, by the time that's stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam here, that time agitates the original Mahatattva, and therefore the various combinations that make up this material world come into existence. So, Purusha Prakriti Stohi, you know what's that verse? Hetu Prakriti Rujati. What is that? Purushasa. Karya Karana Katra Dve Hetu Prakriti Rujati. So, material nature is said to be the cause of the various conditions of work and the various positions that living beings achieve within this material world to perform various kinds of work. But Purusha Sukha Dukkhanam Bhoktritve Hetu Ruchyate, the living being himself is the cause of that distress and happiness. So one may be very great or very insignificant. Actually, everyone's insignificant in this material world. But some have a position of greatness. Some people are born great, some people achieve greatness, and some have greatness thrust upon them. But that is due to one's activities in previous lives and in this life. In previous lives and in this life. Sometimes said there's no need to endeavor because whatever is destined for us will come about. On the other hand, Lord Krishna also says that without working, no one can even get to eat. Sharira yatra pichate na prasidyate karmanaha. One cannot achieve anything in life, one cannot even maintain the body without doing some kind of work. So these two propositions appear to be in contradiction of each other. We'll find both things stated in Shastra. That we get what was coming to us. On the other hand, we have to endeavor to achieve some result. On one hand, it said the result is already ordained. On the other hand, it said that we have to work, we have to endeavor to get some result. So they appear to be contradictory, but they're not contradictory, they're complementary. Surprisingly, how can they be complementary? That means that from previous lives we have certain kind of destiny, which is like a template for our lives. Template, you know this word? Well, if you don't understand it, then I have to explain. It means it's like a basic design, which is alterable in various ways. It means something like this. I'll give an example. It's just like we find a coloring book. A picture is given in black and white, and you have to fill it in. So the basic design is there. You can't change that. But according to the different colors you choose to use, then it becomes somewhat different. And if you color it nicely, if it's just a very young child, maybe 4 years old, who does it, then it might look quite different. Even you can see the design underneath, but it's just a mess. And then as they get a little older, they more or less get the colors, the crayons come inside the shapes that they're supposed to come. And as they get a little bit older, then they can do it nicely. And then when they get older, if they're expert, they don't need the template at all. They can make their own design. So we get a certain kind of design. But we have choice also. We have a certain kind of design. We get it. How do we get it? That karmana daiva netrena jantur dehopapattaye. According to our previous activities, and under the direct daiva netra, under the supervision of the devas, the demigods and the Supreme Lord. It's a cooperative effort. The Supreme Lord is more or less overseeing everything. But there are, karmana deva netra jantur deho patya. According to our previous karma, and under the direction of the Supreme Lord and the demigods, a living being attains a certain kind of body. The Supreme Lord sees everything, but he's not the only one who sees everything. He has assistants. There are so many demigods, powerful demigods, who are witnesses of everything we do. Yamaraj, Brahma, then Vayu, air is everywhere. The various directions, the demigods of the various directions. The air, fire, earth, water, the demigods of the various elements, they are present everywhere, and they perceive everything that every living being does. Especially those in the human form of life, because they are being judged. In other forms of life, one is completely directed. He's the animals, they have no choice. Sometimes psychologists, they do tests using monkeys to see if they have some choice. Just like the famous behavioral psychologist, so famous I can't remember his name, but anyway. What was his name? Come on, you're a PhD, you should. I guess you don't know everything. Skinner. I think it was Skinner. Yeah, it was him. So, and then Pavlov also, he did the same thing. No, that's a different experiment. Anyway, I believe it was Skinner. Did this experiment in which the banana is put inside a cage and the monkey naturally goes to get it. But then, as soon as he tries to get the banana, so the whole, some contraption comes down and it becomes very painful. So, then after some time, they do this various times, and after some time, he learns, don't go for the banana, although a monkey, instinctively, when he sees a banana, he'll try to grab it. But after some time, he thought, not that banana sitting in that device. And then they did more complex ones in which they could see what is the intelligence of a monkey that I can't remember exactly, that two times in a row you get the pain, and then the third time it's okay. So then they learn the third time you're going to get in. Like this, making different experiments. So it could be said that the monkey also has the power of choice. He has free will. Not exactly. Because he doesn't have the power to discriminate between what is right and wrong. So, free will, the human beings have. Some minute independence. So under the direction of the Supreme Lord and his assistants, according to one's karma and one's desire, one gets a certain kind of body. Karma and desire, they're intricately linked. If one acts in a tamasic manner, then he will develop desires accordingly. And if one desires in a tamasic manner, for instance, in the mode of ignorance, then he will perform such work. So these two, action and desire, they're intricately linked. So we get a certain kind of body according to our work and according to our desire. For instance, more or less everyone desires to be a big shot, a leader, or famous. So if one has that desire very strongly, that may be fulfilled in the next life. But according to our karma also, if one is so much desirous to be Indra, and he does the prescribed karma for that, which is to perform 100 horse sacrifices, then he can become Indra. If one simply desires to be a leader so that one can exploit others and he acts in a very sinful way, then he may take birth as a dog and become the biggest dog on the street. He becomes the leader of the dogs. So according to our desires and activities, under the supervision of the Supreme Lord and his representatives, we get certain kinds of bodies. And in the human form of life, the body we get in the human form of life, we have some measure of free will. That is also influenced largely by the consciousness that we accrue from a previous life. Actually, someone who's in the mode of ignorance, that means they're like an animal. Almost. They're not much more developed than an animal. So their level of free will is not very developed. They don't have much intelligence. I remember seeing this when I was in my short stint between school and ISKCON. I had a few jobs. Didn't hold any of them very long. But anyway, one time I was working in a factory, and I saw that how the factory workers, who generally one does not have a very high level of intelligence to be a factory worker, because if one has more intelligence, he can't tolerate to do such a job. Actually, one of our godbrothers, Bhaja Hari Prabhu, he was working, he's from South Wales, where they have, or at least they used to have, lots of steel works. So he told Prabhupada that, "Prabhupada, I used to work in the steel mill, and it was very hot and dark and noisy, and the air was just nasty, and you had to take this very hot molten liquid and take it and pour it in somewhere else, and had to do this all day, and I thought it was horrible. I couldn't tolerate it, but the others who were doing, they were doing that for years. How is it that they could tolerate it and I couldn't?" Prabhupada said, "Because you were a brahmana in your previous life." So people with, yeah, anyway, I was in the factory and I was seeing how they'd bring their newspapers to work. I mean, newspaper means the tabloid. These kind of people that read tabloids. You know that tabloid? You have that also. Yeah. So, and in the tabloid you don't get much of a high level of commentary on anything. Anyway, sometimes I'd look at their newspapers and they'd have different newspapers. And then they'd be discussing among themselves, "No, I think so-and-so should be selected for the England team." And the other would say, no, I think so-and-so should be." So they had their different opinions. And look in the newspaper, and whatever one newspaper said, he was saying. And what the other person who read the other newspaper, whatever the newspaper commentator reported that this person should be in the team, he said. So their so-called opinion, whatever the newspaper said, they took it. That this is right. So not a very high level of intelligence, not a very high level of discrimination. But one who has more developed intelligence, they have a higher level of discrimination. And knowledge, those who have more knowledge, there's discrimination means on the basis of knowledge. Otherwise, that's why you see a monkey doesn't actually have discrimination. Because his, one thing is his knowledge is very limited. And he doesn't have knowledge of what is right and what is wrong. So, actually that's why people in India, people ask, "Well, why is India suffering so much?" And whisper, someone asked me this the other day. It was an Indian in Germany asked me that he'd just come to the West recently, and he was saying that we people in India, we are so religious and pious, and yet we're suffering so much, and we come to the Western countries and they do all bad things and they're enjoying life so much. So I told him, just first of all, just understand, it's not that in India everyone's so pious, all the sinful activities are going on there. And you may be thinking people in Germany are enjoying so much. You don't know how much they're suffering mentally. You just came in the summer, just wait 6 months also. It'll all be covered with ice and snow, and you'll see how much enjoyable it is. So anyway, nevertheless, there could be some kind of argument that people in the West, they are enjoying more. At least it seems like that, because we don't find people lining up at the Indian embassy in Germany to emigrate to India. Actually, we don't see them in India trying to emigrate to Germany either. They go to America, preferably. Why should they? You know, why go to Germany and go to America? So, America's number one choice. So, anyway, we don't find Americans lining up to emigrate to India either. They might go there out of some curiosity. Maybe. Not that many go. So, anyway, it could be argued that, yes, India is more pious. Still today, there is more natural piety in India than in the West. But at the same time, they're suffering so much. There are various reasons for this, which could be offered. Prabhupada gave various reasons. One reason is that because they have knowledge, or they're supposed to have knowledge of Vedic culture, of what is right and what is wrong, therefore they have to suffer more than in the Western countries. They have to suffer more because in the Western countries people don't have so much knowledge. They're in their culture, they don't have knowledge. They don't have to develop knowledge of what is right and what is wrong. Something they may have. Something they have. A basic idea, thou shalt not kill. But they restricted that only to the human form of life. And then now that's changed also. Thou shalt not kill except babies in the womb. And the next thing that it's going to come is old people. Thou should kill older people. And then it's going to come to spastics and well, they don't say spastics because that's not a very nice word, so they changed it to the physically handicapped, and now they've changed it to the physically challenged. Just like they said Negroes, and then they said blacks, and then they said Afro-Americans. It's like they're trying to... But whatever word you change it to, it just becomes a pejorative anyway. It's like Gandhi changed the untouchables to Harijans, and now Harijan just means the same. It means this comes to mean the same thing. You don't change the status by changing the name. Anyway, now thou shalt kill, and it's going to be, it will become like, just like Hitler then. People, he wanted to kill the Jews and the gypsies and the homosexuals. Did he kill the homosexuals also? Yeah. And the mentally retarded. Who else? The Poles and the Ukrainians and all the people? Old people, yeah. They were considering that. So a very practical policy. No, it's a kind of a black joke. But actually it's practical. If you, from the material point of view. So, but later on the people thought, well, this is wrong. After the war, they had the Nuremberg trials, in which the slaughterer, those who were successful in the war, the successful cow slaughterers, tried the unsuccessful cow slaughterers and human slaughterers. Actually, they're all slaughtering. So, actually, it's very interesting because at these trials, many of the people who, before the war, they were ordinary, you know, teachers and doctors and ordinary, respectable citizens, and they became officers in the, what was it called, the German army, the Reich Wehrmacht. There was the Wehrfluff or something, the Air Force. Luftwaffe. These are all terms I half learned from watching TV as a kid. So they were saying that, well, it was very bad that you were in charge of this concentration camp and that you killed so many people. And they would say, I was just doing my duty. I was just following orders. And as far as they were concerned, that was, you know, it was my duty to follow orders. I didn't do anything wrong. I killed so many people, but I was, if I'm given an order, it's my duty to follow orders. The other people said, no, you should have discriminated. If you're given an order to do something wrong, you shouldn't follow it. And even when they're lined up to get shot for being a war criminal, they still couldn't understand, what did I do wrong? I was just following orders. It's not fair. So the Allies, as from our side, the Brits, we called it the Allies, and although the others were also Allies, they were just the unsuccessful Allies. That means the Germans, the Italians, and the Japs. Oh, you're not supposed to say Japs, Japanese. Okay. So they said that, you know, the Allies said that you should have had a better sense of discrimination as to what is right and what is wrong. You are guilty. I was just doing what everyone else did. No, you are guilty. You should have a better sense of discrimination. So actually that works on a higher platform also. They have decided what is right and what is wrong. They have this United Nations Charter of Human Rights in which they say, these are self-evident principles. That, for instance, all human beings have equal rights. But actually, we don't accept that. These are humanistic principles that all human beings have equal rights. But we don't accept that all human beings have equal rights. One has certain privileges according to his behavior. The criminal is put in prison. Well, I have an equal right to be free. But that is limited by your behavior. I don't know now, but when I was a kid, the British government used to pay for higher education, or higher brainwashing, more detailed. So everyone had the right to that, but you had to qualify yourself for it also. That it's not that someone, if you fail all your exams at the school level, that you can go to the university. You have to qualify. So this is a big illusion that everyone is all equal and therefore everyone should have equal treatment. Because one thing is people behave differently. Another thing is that people have different kinds of bodies and different kinds of mentalities. So to treat everyone equally, Prabhupada was talking about modern education is ridiculous because they just stick everyone in the same school and teach them the same thing. But people have got different mentalities. Some people have Shudra mentality, some people have Vaishya mentality, some people have Kshatriya mentality, some people have Brahmana mentality. That's why at the age of 10 or so, the guru is supposed to see what is the inclination of the child and give them education accordingly. And those who are from Shudra families, they wouldn't be given education, that formal kind of education at all. They'd get the education at home, learn how to be a potter, how to be a, whatever it may be, a farm assistant or blacksmith, goldsmith, whatever. So, again, men and women have different bodies. So to say that women should also have career opportunities, why are you discriminating against them? Discrimination has to be there. That's why you have different toilets. Men and women's toilets. Of course, in America, I heard in the universities, it's all the showers and everything. It's unisex. Because they don't have any discrimination. It's so stupid. But there are different bodies which have different functions. So women don't, they're not trained to be traditionally, now modern society is different, they're not traditionally trained to become soldiers or doctors. Doctors already, they are doctors at home, but not surgeons or something like that. Now, automatically they're doctors. They know how all the different herbs to use for the babies and all this kind of thing. For everyone, not just babies. So they don't have a career separate from the home because their business is in their body is made for having children, and their inclination is like that. That's why you see that for they have different toys for boys and for girls. For girls, they have little dolls, and for boys, they have like this G.I. Joe or Action Man, a different mentality. Even you see boys like dogs more and girls like cats more, isn't it? Because they're different. They're different. Actually, the dolls, the girls didn't used to have dolls because by the time they're five, they'd be looking after the next babies. That was their natural inclination to do that. So everyone is equal. That's the gift of the demoniac society, which doesn't discriminate. Anyway, it's getting a little bit off the topic there. But anyway, there are differences, and discrimination has to be there. And if one doesn't exercise discrimination, then he's considered a criminal. So there's also God's law. The United Nations, they want to they've made a charter of human rights based on what they call self-evident humanistic considerations. But what they think is self-evident is based on their brahmapramad vipralipsa karana partav, their illusion, cheating propensity, imperfect senses and tendency to commit mistakes. So imperfect senses, tendency to commit mistakes, illusion and cheating propensity it stretches to their very vision of reality. Their whole worldview is illusioned, full of mistakes, full of the cheating propensity formed by their imperfect senses. So therefore they can't ascertain what is right and what is wrong. Pravrittim cha nivrittim cha janana vidura asuraha. What is right and what is wrong? What is correct action? What is incorrect action? They cannot ascertain it. And therefore they say there are different opinions. Everyone has different opinions. They can't ascertain what is right and what is wrong. Is abortion, this is a clear example from the modern age. Is abortion right or is it wrong? And there are certain people who say, well, it's wrong because you're killing the child in the womb. And some will say, well, it's not really a human being yet. How can it be? It's not a human till it comes out of the womb. Well, they say, in different countries, it's like after 6 weeks abortion is not, but they say, well, it's not really a human being. Well, they say it because it's dangerous for the mother after that. So people say, well, the mother should be allowed to choose herself. She has the individual right to choose. So they've stretched the individual right to choose to that if you want, you can choose to be a homosexual. If you want, you can choose to die by euthanasia. To all kinds of things that were formerly considered wrong, even in Western countries, because they had some kind of religious culture. So they've stretched this right to join. Because they say, well, asatyam apratishtam te jagadahuranishwaram. They say, these are all these verses, pravritin chana, and this one is quoted, these are all quotations from the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita in which Lord Krishna is describing the demoniac nature. So they think that there is no ultimate truth. They think that there is no actual basis to reality. There's no God in control. And therefore they think that this is the atheistic, humanistic idea that there's no God, but still it's good to think not only of ourselves, but of all human beings. And we should act not simply selfishly, but for the benefit of the whole human race. So they think that, well, people should have the maximum amount of freedom to choose what they want to do. And why should anyone interfere with that? Who are you to tell me that I cannot have an abortion? It's my body, not yours. What can you say? This is called a specious argument. It means that an argument that appears to be solid, but actually it's flawed. Because it's not your body. The body does not belong to you. It is given by the Supreme Lord. Karmana deva netrena jantur deho papatiye. We get different bodies under the direction of the Supreme Lord. And that body is supposed to be used for performing proper activities by which we can become purified and develop Krishna consciousness. Human life is meant for, at the minimum, pious living and ultimately for developing Krishna consciousness. So if we misuse that, and if we perform sinful activities, activities that cause suffering to others, then, in other words, if we misuse our free will, then we have to suffer. And we get, again, another kind of body. So this is, actually, this series of verses is about the time factor, how it wears us down. But I'm just trying to present how, what is the, time is the medium within which we live in this material world, and we enact our fantasy of being lords, controllers and enjoyers separate from Krishna. We act in certain ways and we develop certain desires. It all goes on within the medium of time. That's why the prince today may be the pauper tomorrow. We can never tell what will happen. One who is very considered very exalted in human society may be despised later. The king may be dragged down from his throne. And there's so many examples in Romania recently. What was that guy's name? I can't pronounce it even by looking. Ciascu or something. Okay. Ciascu. So he was in total control of the country, it seemed. And then within a few days they just threw him out and they gave him a trial and shot him. It was a very short trial. And no one in the West complained that, well, it wasn't a proper trial. They thought, well, you know, he got what was coming to him. So, just a few days before, he was like the dictator. No one, well, people were afraid. So much afraid, and then dead, finished. That Berlin Wall, people were afraid to go near it, and then then they were sitting on top of it. Where a few days previously, if they had tried to sit on top of that wall, they would have fallen off with a bullet in their head. And then they had the pleasure of sitting on top of it before they pulled it down. So, everything is changing in this material world due to the influence of time. Time is the medium by which we, in due course of time, we get what is coming to us. But we can change it also. Because we have free will. To some extent we can change it. By our activities. To some extent. Although, if it's very strongly ordained for us, for instance, that we will be poverty stricken, then it's unlikely that we'll become rich. And there's no reason, no need to endeavor for it. Or vice versa. You see even some devotees there's one Tamil president I know, he always misspends money like anything, and so much money comes in. So somehow or other, he's just got that. It's not that, you see, even devotees, now you're all going to run off to the astrologers after I say that, after I say this, that even devotees that we may be take up Krishna consciousness, but the basic template of our lives to a large extent may go on. Just like one of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was a brilliant astrologer, but he gave it up to fully concentrate on preaching Krishna consciousness. So one time he just happened to be in the room where one of his prominent disciples had his chart was there. He had his chart out. For some reason, he had his chart out. He had quickly looked at it, and he said that, "Oh, you will have great power, great ability to understand philosophy and to explain it to others, and you will be well respected by others, and you will give many prominent people will come to you for advice, but personally you will never become a very great person or a leader, because there's such and such in your house which you can never yourself become. You can advise leaders, all leaders will come to you for advice, but you'll never become a prominent leader yourself." So even though he was a sannyasi and a prominent devotee, it means he was fully dedicated to Krishna consciousness. But that not that he didn't become Krishna conscious, but he became Krishna conscious, but within that template within which he was working. So time. The influence of time. We're all under the influence of time. But we can escape the influence of time. Savadhaman parityaja mame kam sharanam raja hang tuang sava papi bhimokshishamimashacha. We can escape the debilitating influence of time. It doesn't, by taking to Krishna consciousness, we become free from all sinful reactions. Now, we may say, well, still devotees, you know, they get in car crashes and there's so many bad things happen to them. Why is that? If they're under Krishna's protection. This has to be understood very carefully. A devotee, if he appears to be having some bad karma, it's not bad karma. Karmani nirdahati kintu ta bhakti bhajam. How does that verse begin? Yes, trindra gopamata vendra mahosra karma bandhana rupa phala bhajana mata noti. Karmani nirdahati kintu ta bhakti bhajam govinda madhi purusham tamaham jami. From Indra to Indra, from every living being, Indra down to Indra. Means Indra, King Indra, and one kind of worm or germ called Indra. There are so many different kinds of living beings. So all of them are enjoying or suffering the results of their karmic reactions. But one who takes to Krishna consciousness, those karmic reactions are absolved by Govinda. So then you say, well, devotees, they, you know, also get car accidents and this and that and so many bad things. How is that? So one answer is that one gets the spinning fan example Prabhupada gave. If you turn off the fan, still something goes on for some time. Another thing is that it is not actually a sinful reaction. If a devotee, a surrendered devotee, has some accident or some sickness, it's not due to bad karma. It is not going on under the influence of Mahamaya, the external potency. It's going on under the influence of Yogamaya, the Supreme Lord's internal potency. You may say, well, Yogamaya simply gives happiness, yes. But for devotees, she may... Actually, Mahamaya is not different from Yogamaya. She's an expansion. So the while living in this material world, the material energy acts upon the devotee under the influence of the internal potency in such a way that the devotee becomes more and more surrendered to Krishna. So even though there are difficulties, the devotee knows this is Krishna's blessing by which I can become more detached from this material world and more attached to Him. So in this material world, time is the medium in which material nature works, and living beings suffer or enjoy. It's said that in the spiritual world, there is no influence of time. But what does that mean? Because Krishna has his Ashtakaliya Leela. His pastimes go on within 8 times of the day. So it means there's no influence of time. There's time also, but there's no debilitating influence of time, as in this material world. In this material world, time is that which destroys everything. But in the spiritual world, time is that which nourishes Krishna's pastimes. Time is the medium in which Krishna's pastimes take place. And because there's no decay in the spiritual world, therefore it's said that there is no time. There's no time as we know it. It doesn't have the influence of decay. But time, it's just going on. Krishna's pastimes are eternal. He has his template also. He does the same things over and over again, but a little bit different sometimes. Not that every time it's exactly the same. Hare Krishna. Is there any question about this? How can we discriminate between the influence of yoga maya and a devotee's mistake? Now, a devotee has a choice to do something, and if he does something wrong, that's his foolishness. That's not yoga. You burnt all the chapatis which are supposed to be offered to Krishna. Yoga maya? No. That's your lack of conscientiousness, lack of proper desire to serve Krishna, because you are thinking of something else except how to please Krishna properly while cooking the chapatis. Therefore you burn them all. You mean how to be Krishna conscious? Well, there's a new book translated in Slovenian. You can buy that and follow that. Beginner's Guide to Krishna Consciousness. Yeah, then you, alright, if you don't believe me, I'll tell you what's in the book. You get a bead bag, you put your hands in it, and you chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, and go around and you do that 16 times and you follow everything else and you become Krishna conscious. Once we get the understanding that we should be Krishna conscious, then we do what is required to become Krishna conscious, which means to follow the process given by Gurus, Sadhu and Shastra. There's nothing else. This is the way to do it. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jaya.